Hello, this is CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to Voices of Montreal, an experimental new radio show that we're trying out here at the station. My name is Spencer, broadcasting live from CKUT Studios in downtown Montreal. I'm joined by Michelle and Alyssa today. You guys want to say hi quickly?
Hello.
Hi.
Cool, thank you. So we're going to do a mix of talking about some stuff that will be extremely interesting and also playing some music. So we're going to have Alyssa playing some music. And I guess maybe before then we could just start, if both of you don't mind, just kind of introducing yourselves. I think that could be a good place to start.
Hi, I'm Alyssa, new volunteer at CKUT, but big music enthusiast.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm a student at McGill, and I'm very passionate about mental health and its connections to art and music. So I'm very excited to be here.
Cool. What are you studying, Alyssa?
I'm no longer a student, so I'm living the artist life full time right now.
Cool. Yeah. That's the best. But being a student is amazing as well. What's the official, Michelle, what's the official kind of faculty or something that you're in?
I'm doing an honors right now in psychology. So I'm sort of completing my first research thesis.
Cool.
Which is very exciting. So I guess the Department of Psychology is my thing.
Cool. Well, maybe we can hear about your thesis on the show today.
Yes.
I'm going to grill you about it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I can give you some insights.
Cool. So Alyssa, what kind of music do you have on your, we kind of did a surprise, you're the DJ, feature.
Yeah.
What do you got for us here?
I mean, today I just kind of went through my MP3s and picked out some songs that I felt like listening to today. So just gonna load it up here.
Cool. Thank you for coming prepared.
You're very welcome.
This is the kind of stellar contributions that CKUT volunteers make on a daily basis.
Woohoo! All right, it's just loading. Do we want to start with some tunes now?
Yeah, let's put at least one song on and we can kind of catch our breath here in the studio.
All right. This is Surfside Sex by Patrick Kelly.
Thank you. Stay tuned. This is CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal. This is CKUT. You're listening to Voices of Montreal. You're listening to Surfside Sex by Patrick Cowley on the album Afternooners. And we were just talking about how we like this music. We are fans. And I hope you are too. Driving around, doing a little skid in the snow out there. You can honk that horn and let everyone know that you're tuned in. So we were thinking maybe we would talk to Michelle a little bit about what she's doing at school and what you're passionate about. And yeah, I'm curious.
Okay. Well, something that I'm really passionate about just outside of school too is mental health research and education. Sort of like, I think through my own experiences, a lot of what I've realized in high school especially was that like I needed a lot of support, but I didn't know where to get it from, or it was really hard to be accessible. And so I felt really isolated and alone. So I just like buried myself in a bunch of research about mental health and education. And I just realized that there were so many things that are so important to know, because like mental health is so pervasive throughout all areas of our life that we just are so uneducated about, and we don't know about. And like, these things can provide so much benefit to our lives and the lives of people around us. And so I just thought it was really important to sort of at least be one person to start the conversation about mental health, at least with my peers and my friends and stuff. So
where did you, like, as a high school student, what was your, when you decided, okay, I want to learn more about this, where was the first place that you started looking?
I think I first started like in my psychology class, sort of getting a feel of like what the actual field was about and what psychology is all about and sort of what I can do with that information. And I think my first sort of interest in learning more about mental health came from learning about art and artists and me using art as a creative outlet to sort of like express like an emotional catharticism, sort of just explode all my emotions into my art because I didn't know how to deal with them any other way. And so just sort of connecting with a lot of like artists and a lot of work and seeing how like my mental health could be so bolstered by doing something like art, and then learning more about that and then sort of getting into this idea of like, well, I feel like people don't understand me and I feel like I always need to explain like why I'm so anxious or like why I talk so fast or why I'm so quiet or et cetera, et cetera. And so sort of starting from there and wanting people to understand me and wanting people to understand other people that live with mental illness just drove me to sort of, it's like the internet. There's so many things on the internet to find. Read some scientific articles at first. They were pretty dense and like not very that interesting, but
yeah,
they provided.
What I was curious
like,
about was like, it seems like a daunting thing to try to wrap your head around maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that like also something that I realized was, oh, well, I'm becoming so self-aware about like all these things that I maybe need to work on or like things that I could grow on or like unhealthy ways that I might be talking to myself or things like that. So I became so self-aware about them. But then I was like, I know that growth takes time. I know that change takes time. And so like I have all these perceived quote unquote flaws that I know that I need to work on. And I have so many areas of growth, but like I feel very stagnant. So that was something really hard to balance, I think, in terms of like, what can I actually do to see progress in my day-to-day life versus like progress over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. What kind of art were you using to express yourself in high school?
In high school, I think I was doing a lot of oil paint.
Cool.
Which was, I think, really meditative and fun and relaxing, sort of just dialing into something and going back to it and working on it, I think gave me a lot of stability that was really needed for like all the chaos going on and in all other areas of my life. And I think that like even now it's really hard for me to get off my phone or like get off my computer and actually sit down and like just no phone, nothing, just my music playing and doing art. It's really hard for me to want to do that or feel like I have time to do that. Even though I do have time, I just spend it doing like other unproductive things. So I think just even having an art class in high school like made it really, I think was really good for my mental health, because then I had time to like just like block everything out and just reflect, and mm-hmm. That's really fun.
Yeah, and I think you also referenced like the idea that maybe it's like a almost like a muscle that you exercise in developing, not even developing like an artistic practice per se, but even just developing like habits of making time for it or having it be like an option of something that you could do.
And I think that like, that was also something that was so hard for me to understand was like, oh, well, self-care is like every day. This is something I have to do every single day to continue to try and care for myself and my well-being, because like it shouldn't take a physical manifestation of my symptoms for me to feel like I need to do something about them. I should be doing them every single day because mental health is with us every single day. And we don't really get to pick and choose when we have mental health or when we want to focus on it, because like it affects our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors, and like our relationships with other people. And I think like I sort of put it on the back burner for a really long time because I was like, I need to do work and I need to be at school and like I need to be a good student, and like then I have to like focus on getting a job for the summer and like my future, and like it's really easy to just sort of forget about that, and then you sort of go down. I think a lot of us maybe fall victim to sort of the way that we talk to ourselves. I think in high school and now even like the way that I talk to myself about being productive and the work that I get accomplished on a day-to-day basis is really detrimental to my health sometimes, because, you know, I'm like, oh, well, I didn't do anything today. I just like sat in bed and I was so lazy. Like I'm so stupid. Like, why did I do that sort of talk? But I'm like, well, maybe my body actually needed this rest and like it needed this time to sort of like recoup. And this is my body telling me that I need this time. So I shouldn't be upset at myself. But our society can sometimes place unrealistic expectations on like the level at which we have to perform, and like financial success being like our only sense of worth, and like individualism and uniqueness is so important in like individualistic society like Canada or America. And so I don't know, I think I tried to talk to myself a lot more nicer, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to open up the floor to maybe if Alyssa or you, Spencer, wanted to share like any sort of ways that you talk to yourselves about your productivity, and then we can find ways to sort of challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
So
what do you think, Alyssa? Anything come to mind?
Oh man, that's a good question. I mean, I don't spend that much time thinking about productivity, which makes me think maybe I should spend more time thinking about it.
I'm sure it's enough. Whatever little bit it is, I'm sure it's enough.
I don't know. I really listen to kind of my body and my mind in the moment. And I love working on things and keeping busy, and also relating to what you're saying about an art practice. But I also really like relaxing and hang out with friends. And I don't know, I think even my time as a student is when I started to actively create that separation. Mm-hmm. And even though I enjoyed school and learning and pouring myself into nerdy papers and stuff, I still also enjoyed unwinding and kind of would create that active separation mentally, between those two different mental spaces, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think, so I feel like you use music a lot as a sort of way to separate or distinguish between those two areas of life, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, music is a big one. I mean, I feel like I probably easily spend anywhere between like 4 to 8 hours a day listening to music. It's always on in my house. So yeah, it's pretty tied to my frame of mind and what I'm doing, if it's active listening or passive listening as well, you know, solo listening with friends.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how flexible music can be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're doing a much better job than, well, me at least, of finding
it. You're just hard on yourself because you know the insides of the
maybe I know too much.
Yeah, you know too much. You gotta drop out.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Drop out and just focus on the radio for the rest of my life. That would be lovely.
Yeah. No, I didn't mean radio necessarily, but yeah. It made sense a lot, the thing you said about almost like not wanting it to get to like a crisis point or something. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of like, which I also struggle with, drinking enough water. It's like, if you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated.
Yeah.
So you got to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
Not let yourself get to that point. Because it is easier to recognize if you're not super in touch with yourself, which is difficult, or like, you know, a skill.
Mm-hmm.
It can be hard to recognize maybe the subtler, not symptoms, but like expressions of maybe not feeling your best, to even... But it's cool if you can develop those, that spidey sense to be like, oh, wait, this is a little, it's like a very small and very manageable warning sign or indication that I need to go like adjust something a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely better than doing like crazy swings back in super wellness mode for a month and then let it slip or something.
Yeah,
like a New Year's resolution style thing that can be difficult to keep up with.
Yeah. And I think that, well, it's just like the small things that we just like talk to, the small things that we say to ourselves, or like every time we sort of like break a little promise to ourselves, it sort of builds up and snowballs, and it's very like subconscious or invisible to us until like we experience some distress or we experience a panic attack or we're feeling like an unusual loss of appetite or like a change in our sleep schedule. We don't really think about like what could be causing those until they cross some sort of threshold and it impacts like our ability to function. But a lot of like a newer branch of psychology called positive psychology focuses a lot about what is good about us instead of what is bad about us. Like psychopathology focuses on like mental illnesses and mental disorders. And so it's just sort of taking the idea of positive psychology and working that into your everyday life where, you know, you want to maintain the level of mental health that you already have and you only want that to grow and you don't want it to get so low that you have to boost it back up to your normal functioning level. You sort of always want it to be there.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard for our bodies to regulate something like that, especially because it's not so conscious or as talked about, like just as salient in our everyday lives as our physical health is, because like our body is our body, but our mind, sometimes we don't understand like the impact that our mind has on everything that we do. And so, yeah, especially like when the weather has been gray for like the sky has been gray for like 10 days in a row and not anymore. I think today is actually really nice out. Well, it was in the morning, but it's really important to just take little steps. And I think music can be one of them.
Yeah.
Which is really important.
Well, should we listen to some?
Yeah.
So you're a pro at the radio already. The segue is like that. All right. What do we got next, Alyssa?
All right. Up next, we got Why by none other than Carly Simon.
Why?
And we're back. You're listening to CKUT, Voices of Montreal, first ever aired episode. And I'm Melissa.
Hello. We've changed places, in case you can't tell.
Yes, we're doing a little three-way rotation today.
Yeah. So we're, just to remind people, we're broadcasting live from CKUT. And we are loving it, being in the studio. And last, we were talking to Michelle about some mental health stuff. Yes. And ways to kind of stay in touch with how we're feeling, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
What else are we talking about?
Talking about sort of like ideas about
positive psychology.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some things about productivity and our beliefs around that.
Is there anything else that you mentioned that maybe this kind of newer field of positive psychology was interesting to you? Are there any other kind of specific parts of the field that you've been encountering either at school or outside of school that have been jumping out at you?
Yeah, well, I think also a lot of psychology is obviously about the individual mind. And a lot of the times when we think about sort of things that happen to us or things that like we've experienced, we sort of experience them with like a me sort of mindset, and we forget about like the broad environmental construct in society that we live in and how that can be affecting like our decisions and people's actions. And like a lot of the time, I think just tying this back into our conversation about productivity, like our beliefs about productivity or like how productive we can be in any given day is obviously going to be different. And a lot of that can be because of like the environmental constraints that that are placed upon us by like this broad social or economic or political frameworks that we operate in. And I think it's really important to remember the impact that our environment can have onto us, because a lot of the times we're like, oh, well, this person did this because they're like this, or I did this because I'm just so stupid and I'm silly and blah, 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 blah. But it's like, well, actually, maybe I did this because I was running late and like I was feeling really stressed and this has happened before and blah, blah, blah. So just sort of allowing ourselves to have to hold space to realize that there are other factors that contribute to our productivity and our performance, and sort of making space for those, I think, allows it to be easier to forgive yourselves, especially when you fuck up a little. Sorry.
It's okay. You're French. You can, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I feel like it's something that I've learned more about when it comes to like interpersonal situations that I've encountered in my life. The more that it happens, more often I try to, like, my knee jerk reaction is a certain way, and it's individual is doing something because they want to or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's the better I get at it, I think maybe you try to remind yourself, like, or try to think about like, why might this be happening?
Mm-hmm.
Or like the kind of environmental stuff like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah.
Can I ask, do you both think that productivity is a true or false value in our society? Is that too broad?
Like falsely held value?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like a value as something that we hold in high esteem.
Yeah. Like, is it something that it clearly has a place, like from our discussion, it's something that most people think about, and, you know, there's articles written about it and books and think pieces, and it seems to be this notion that's really pushed on people. And I'm just wondering if it has a place, if it's a positive maybe value or not.
Maybe if you're like a farmer or something.
Yeah, maybe if you're a farmer.
I don't know. I think it's hard not to just say something like, oh, it's all relative and everyone should do their own thing. But yeah, I think it's also like sometimes I'll feel like, oh, I wish I was being more productive. And I don't know if that is always coming from like society's expectation of me. Sometimes it's coming from my own. Maybe my own is tied to that, or, you know, I'm sure you could dig a little deeper into that one if you wanted to. But yeah, I guess sometimes it's tricky, or I find it interesting to like try to trace back the feeling and try to figure out why, I guess. And yeah, I think it's definitely interesting seeing people, and like the more broad, like diverse is the wrong word, but the more like people that you get to know, well, you realize everyone just moves at different speeds entirely, and people like kill it at different speeds and do great things at different speeds. And somebody who only has the energy to make music like a couple times a year, but that makes really cool stuff is like, that's mm-hmm. like very exciting, as well as someone who's doing it every night or something like that. And I think the more you're exposed to people who do it different ways and kind of like illustrate that it can be done interestingly or passionately or whatever in all these different ways, the more, hopefully the more it opens your own mind to like adapt or like adopting some of those people's approaches and like sprinkling them into your own mm-hmm. way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important to ask that question, like, is productivity actually a value that we should have? Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to challenge where our beliefs of productivity come from. Like Spencer, you were saying, like, either do they come from society or are they coming from me? And like, what is actually my motivation to be doing this right now? Mm-hmm. Am I doing this because I feel like I need to, because of the expectations that either I place on myself or mm-hmm. are placed on me? Or am I doing this because this is something that I actually care about and like I'm willing to suffer for, and this is something that like I'm willing to put in the effort for because this is something that I want to see through mm-hmm. sort of. So I think it's just maybe valuing productivity, but like, obviously, Adam, I guess in moderation, mm-hmm. productivity in moderation, and sort of realizing that it can change every day. And like your productivity is not going to be the same every single day, or else you're just going to be some like robot worker in a factory, just producing the same amount of things each day. And that's, mm-hmm. I think rest can also be really productive too. And we forget yeah. how important rest can be for our body.
Yeah, sometimes I think I have fun sleeping, so mm-hmm. yeah,
like even you just like finding that balance between like unwinding and sort of like doing your work and being on top of things and then just having that time mm-hmm. to let your body relax, like is productive. Like you're doing something that's sort of making yourself feel better and like boosting your well-being, and you're enjoying it. And so how can we say that that's not productive, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it's also tough, like you're in school, so you have, as far as expectations of productivity, there's an external factor mm-hmm. to that as well, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have, it's not about whether you are going to go home and do an oil painting or not, yeah. where you're in charge, you have the control, right?
Yeah.
So how do you try to, do you just have to submit sometimes and just be like, I just got to crank out this
yeah.
productivity, even though it's going to be hard for me or like hurt me in a certain way,
if
you're not feeling up to it at a certain point?
Sometimes. Yeah, like it's really hard because there's this external sort of like requirement that's mm-hmm. placed onto me. It's really hard to find intrinsic motivation for doing the things that I actually want to do, because I think it's like if you get feedback from your grades and from your professors and it's not positive or it's not something that you want, you're going to feel less motivated to do what you want to do. And like, I think it's been really hard for me to feel passionate about like continuing some of my classes because it's just so hard to find like any sort of intrinsic motivation, because there are so many external factors that are being placed on you and being like, this is what you should do and this is what you have to do. And like, you're not really going to have much time for what you actually want to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's been like an area that's been really hard for me to sort of balance and understand what my productivity actually is and how to sort of take time for myself away from that.
Yeah, I've definitely met a lot of students who feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Who maybe it's like there used to be different expectations of like sacrifice or something of mm-hmm. like do these 4 years and then you can, you know,
yeah.
you'll be set up mm-hmm. for something else. And
yeah.
just it might suck at times, but you got to get through it. Or like,
yeah.
and some people, if it's a job or something, you don't always have a choice, right? It's like you just got to go to work mm-hmm. and do it so that you can make enough money to live or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I guess maybe that's being, at least in the student context of some of the people that I've talked to, maybe they have like less pressure or something.
Yeah.
Or they're still doing it, but it's interesting. Like maybe that's become more of an option even, is to be like, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not enjoying myself.
I think in terms of like being motivated to do something, there's a lot of things that a social psychologist, I think his name is Baumeister, he came up with this theory of self-control and how we have like a limited amount of self-control resources that we can use. And a lot of the times when humans want to motivate themselves, when they want to sort of do something, they set a goal, that's how we motivate ourselves, because we want to do something to mm-hmm. reach this sort of goal. However, it can be really hard for us to like stick to our goals, especially with New Year's resolutions, because we have a limited amount of self-control resources. So like in the winter, like you're sort of returning to classes, returning to work, getting everything organized. Like it's really snowy outside. It takes a lot. It's a lot harder for you to like commute to and from where you need to go. And so like even just doing your daily day-to-day activities takes up a lot of self-control resources that you need to be like, I need to do this and execute this at this time. And so it can be really hard to set new goals, which can explain why a lot of people fail on their New Year's resolutions, because like the time when we set our goals is also a time where our self-control resources are really limited and constrained. And I think what works for me, I guess, in terms of organizing my productivity, but also making sure that I'm like still having some sort of intrinsic motivation as well, is realizing that there's this bigger abstract goal of that I want to reach of, you know, my career, like or doing something about mental health and helping people. That's the goal that I want to achieve. And there are more like proximal goals on the way to get there that like might not be something that I want to do, mm-hmm. but it's something that I have to do because I have this bigger picture in mind. Mm-hmm. So I guess, yeah, we all gotta submit to the pressures.
Yeah, I guess if you can find a bigger picture thing that's motivating enough and mm-hmm. kind of keeps you warm through the cold times or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read this book called like Simple Ways Not to Give a Fuck or something. I can't remember the name of the book.
Oh, isn't it The Subtle Art of Not
yes.
Giving a Fuck?
Yes. Yes. I read that book and the author was basically talking about how you in life you have to choose what you're willing to suffer for, because you're gonna suffer. It's a given. You're not gonna suffer. That's impossible. But you have to choose what you're willing to suffer for in order to make it worth it. And so I guess I'm willing to suffer for psych, for mental health. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting us into your world a bit.
Of course.
Should we play a track?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it. Do you want to pick one out from?
Just by the song titles alone?
Exactly, yeah. It'll be like a game of Russian roulette.
Okay. I'm picking Water Walk.
That's by Exterrestrial. Thank you. All right. That was Water Walk by Exterrestrial, a Montreal local. I'm Melissa, and we're here with Michelle.
Hello. Spencer has stepped out for a second, but I sort of wanted to shift the conversation to talking sort of more about your art and your music and what you're passionate about and maybe...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've kept up an art practice for a long time, like even while I was a student. But recently in November, I took the plunge and quit my full-time job to work on my art. And so right now I'm deep in the grant writing sphere while painting and working on the actual art and the series, kind of looking into other opportunities, trying to like balance the kind of right brain, left brain when it comes to your own practice, right? Mm-hmm. Making the work, but also doing all the, you know, maybe not so fun administrative businessy stuff for it too. So yeah, that's been me since November full time.
It's kind of awesome. What, what medium do you work with, or is it sort of mixed media?
I paint, mainly acrylic paint, and mm-hmm. I used to paint on paper, but right now I'm working on a series of larger scale work, so I just transitioned to canvas again. So
ooh,
it's been
exciting.
A fun and challenging kind of change, you know, mm-hmm. always a different drawing surface, the paint sits differently on it, so yeah, but I just wrapped up a piece last week, and that was when I really felt like I... you know, could sink my teeth into it. And I was actually sad to finish it. It felt like reading a good book and you don't want to give it up or like leave that world.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm finally kind of hitting my stride with these like new materials I'm trying out.
That's always exciting to feel.
Yeah.
Like a surge of momentum.
Yeah. It's good to challenge yourself too. You know, I think it's good to like keep yourself on your toes. Like a big part of, I think any artist, path and any medium is kind of finding your materials, right? Mm-hmm. And finding what feels like you. And so after doing that, I think it's still kind of good to like shake it up and be like, okay, I have my materials, time to try something new. And
you still got it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Every time I paint, I'm like, oh, okay, great. I can still do this. That feeling never goes away.
How did your, I know that you sort of found you're creating your path and found your path now, but how did your path begin? So what was sort of inspired you to?
Yeah, I'm trying to think how far back to go, but way back in high school, I mean, I went to an art school. It was like a public school with an arts program in it. So that was really my introduction to any kind of formal education beyond mm-hmm. just always enjoying drawing and painting. That was really something else that completely changed my trajectory, I think, because I got to paint, you know, like 2.5-3 hours a day as part of school, and it was a fantastic program. And so that was really my foray into it in a more serious sense, like, oh, I could do this, and mm-hmm. I really love this beyond just drawing, you know, for myself. And then I moved to Montreal for school and went to McGill for art history and English literature and kept up the painting on the side. And I dabbled in illustration work and design work and different mediums and was truly just experimenting. Mm-hmm. I illustrated for the McGill Tribune for a couple of years to kind of, you know, try that out and produce something weekly. And so it was always a kind of delicate balance between school work and then art and, you know, taking time for art, taking time for school. Sometimes I prioritize art over school, mm-hmm. which was really fun. And I think I made the right call.
Awesome.
For a specific semester, sometimes you just decide, you know what, this is more meaningful to me than maybe what my classes were at the time. And then, since I graduated, I mean, I've worked in the arts and in music and have loved doing it and also just kept painting. And then I'd say in 2019 is when I really kind of felt like I found something that felt like my own, you know, and it was kind of like after all that experimenting, okay, I've landed, you know, and this mm-hmm. this feels right.
How did you know when you landed? Did somebody tell you?
No one told me, unfortunately. You know, it's funny because I remember at the time my day job was a design illustration job. And so I was spending 8 hours a day basically drawing for someone else and expending all my creative energy on a different vision. And if anything, coming home after that, it would make me want to make the weirdest art I could, you know, after having to do something kind of more, I wouldn't say predictable, but kind of more concrete for someone mm-hmm. else. So I started painting in a very specific sense, I guess, or working on the series that ended up being that kind of like album drop is how I think of it, that first one. And I remember thinking, okay, this is really hard. Like what I was trying to accomplish, what I was doing, I was like, this is hard. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if these are going to work out at all. Like this is challenging and unpredictable, but that's why I need to see it through. Mm-hmm. And then when I finished them, the way that I knew is because I didn't care what anyone else thought at all. I was like, my friends could tell me that, you know, these works suck and I wouldn't care because I knew I made good and honest work.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I knew I was onto it.
I think that's really awesome.
And do you have his... Oh, sorry. Go you got some? I was going to ask about feedback in general. Because I think, remember, like, I even was thinking, like, did somebody tell you? Because sometimes you get feedback and someone's like, you did it.
right.
Do you have, like, a circle of people that you consult with or share your work with?
Yeah, I have close friends and even longtime friends and collaborators, I guess you could say, who I trust with my work, and I'll share ideas or sketches or, you know, pieces as they're on their way. And these are really old friends who are also all artists in their own disciplines. So I definitely trust them. But it's funny because painting is such a solitary practice, or at least for me. Like, I don't really work with anyone else when I do it. And so I've been challenging myself to share my work more, even with friends who aren't necessarily those like longtime collaborators, but just to share it and to see what the response is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's kind of hard for me to do sometimes where it feels so deeply personal, but I feel like that feedback is just interesting and good, whether the feedback is good or not, right?
Like a soft launch.
Yeah, sure. Like a soft launch. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's intimidating sometimes asking someone who isn't intimately familiar with the inner workings of your practice or the material, like, oh, I've made the bold choice of using a different kind of paintbrush on this one, or a different sound or whatever. And maybe someone else won't pick up on that, but
you know, it keeps you humble. It really does. Yeah. Cause I think it's good to not, you know, sometimes you can fall into this void where it just all your work starts to become way too meta. I'm sure with school, it's a similar thing. Sometimes you need somebody to read your paper because it makes sense to you what you're trying to say, but maybe it's not coming across. So I think it's a good balance between the two of, you know, making sure that you're able to go to other people with it. You're not too maybe protective of it. I think it was Neil Gaiman, the writer of Coraline and the Sandman comics. I think he was the one who said, when you metaphorically feel like you're walking around naked with your work, that's when you know that you're onto something and it's good. And so I've always kept that in mind, you know, is what I'm making.
What is your most... metaphorically naked piece?
I'd really have to think about it. Probably the stuff I'm working on now, because it's so new and it's different than the last few pieces. It's hard to describe a painting on air through words, but I mean, all of them are quite personal. I never really realized, but I think because I draw on, you know, moments from my own life, and all the paintings are really these kind of snapshots of psyches, and they're very intimate moments, even if they don't represent specific people. So I think sometimes, you know, when I get friends to model for me, I feel like vulnerable afterwards because these are my friends and these paintings as stand-ins for just figures. But afterwards I can feel a little bit like, oh, okay, I'm walking around naked and I'm making these people do it too.
That's funny. You're even.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's next for you? Do you have any, what's around the corner?
Next
like we talked about
thing.
Goals earlier. Do you have any goals that you would mind sharing?
Yeah. I mean, my goal right now is to, I'm luckily just in a state of making things and creating, and I want to, you know, take advantage of that to its fullest. And I'm really enjoying waking up every day and just thinking about painting and color and, you know, brush marks, because that's not nearly every day of my life. So I'm really working on completing the series. I'm hoping to do that in the next few months and then put on a solo show in the spring. So if any spaces are listening and would like to host my show, by all means.
Radio is a great medium for painting, I find.
Shameless plug.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're able to keep sort of also that intrinsic motivation, because I know that many artists struggle, especially with like the commercialization of art and their work.
Yeah.
It can be really hard to feel motivated to create from a place of, you know, desire, like actual internal desire, because of like this value that's been placed on your art and like this
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a deeply personal thing, and it's a relationship that changes, you know, throughout your life as an artist. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to stay the same. So, you know, there was a time where I would be approached for commissions and I would do them, and then I realized, oh, I really hate doing this. Like, yeah. something changed in me where right now I really need to follow my own vision. Mm-hmm. And who's to say that could change again, you know, and I'll be interested in that again, or you might have just like a different kind of relationship with, let's say, the commercialization of your work, or mm-hmm. what your end goals are, or even what your short-term goals are with it. Mm-hmm. I think like attaching any kind of money, you know, to your work, it always inextricably changes it, right?
Yeah.
Where it's hard to, or even if you're posting online, like seeing the likes or the comments, like psychologically, you know, on the subconscious or consciously, it affects you mm-hmm. in some way. And so I think it's just important to keep in mind that that relationship changes throughout your lifetime, and it's mm-hmm. okay to feel one way about it or to have one kind of goal with your work at one point,
yeah.
and then to maybe shift and be like, you know what, I'm going to make some money now and
yeah.
and do that, and then return to something else. So, yeah.
So life is just about navigating many, many changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got about 5 minutes left. You got any parting words? Should we sign off with a song at some point?
Mm-hmm. We could sign up with a song.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have anyone you want to say hi to on the air?
Ooh, yeah. Hi, Theo. I don't know if you're listening, but if you are, hey.
Hi, girl. I haven't told anybody to listen to this, but maybe.
Good move.
Yeah, exactly. So, hello, everyone. Hi, Montreal.
Cool. I want to say hi to all the CKUT staff and to Jack. Thanks, Jack, for helping set this up.
Yes.
And some version of this show will be back next week, same time, same place. I'm not sure who's coming in. I'll have to check. But hopefully we'll be hearing more from you two sooner than later.
Hopefully yeah, soon. I hope so.
Cool.
Me too.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to all the listeners out there who joined us today for the inaugural experimental episode of Voices of Montreal. Do you want to play song roulette again here and pick we have a folder of tracks with just the titles showing?
Yeah, sure, let's do it. Go
what do you got
it.
Michelle,
all right, goodbye song, Chocolate Town.
Thank you. All right,
this
stay
is by
tuned
song?
This by Ween, one of my favorite bands.
All righty, happy Thursday.
I couldn't taste the taste that I was tasting. I couldn't
an attempt to sometimes turn situations around that was Cannonball Adderley in Black Dialogue. The place of slavery, if you want to call it that, within the celebration and the culture of urban funky music is maybe also part of the importance of slavery and what music meant to slavery and liberation and self-consciousness is, again, talked a little bit about by Frederick Douglass in some of his writing. He spoke of the role that spirituals, for example, had not only as religious songs of slaves, but also as they served the practical needs of slave resistance. He wrote, "We were at times remarkably buoyant, singing hymns and making joyous exclamations, almost as triumphant in their tone as if we had reached a land of freedom and..."
Stay tuned for Positive Vibes on CKUT.